May 30, 2007, it's a Watt from Pedro show. John Coltrane starting this show, which, by the way, we're not in Pedro. I'm in Neuchâtel. Well, we are, because I got my special guest here, Steve McKay, the sax man for the Stooges, and a dear buddy of mine in Neuchâtel, Switzerland. We started off with a song he picked called Dear Old Stockholm, an alternate take with John Coltrane when he was in Miles Davis's band. And you picked that, right, Steve?
Yeah.
I gave him the iPod. We had 350 John Coltrane songs right away, Steve. Pick them.
I think the last time I picked the first out of 500. They're all great, though. Crescent, I didn't know that was as long as it was.
It was Live in Japan.
Okay, I bought myself some time on the show here.
Right. Now, and then after John Coltrane, Miles Davis, we play. Steve, help me with this time.
Okay. So. Hitaori ja dekenai kara tetsudate kudasai. Could you help me because I can't do it by myself, by Migu.
Got it. Right. Thank you much.
I'm sorry for the phonetic bad Japanese.
But yeah, but it's probably better than I could do, man. And, okay, we're in Neuchâtel, Switzerland. It's Wednesday, and it's really incredible, the weather. I mean, we're kind of on the outskirts here. In fact,
right on a big lake.
Right, it's called
Lake Neuchâtel.
Right.
En parle français ici.
Yeah, right. Which means the Swiss part.
Yeah.
The French part of Switzerland.
Yeah.
I almost said the Swiss part of France.
Some people might say that. I think sometimes I feel that way when I'm here.
Okay. How many gigs has the Stooges done in Switzerland?
Boy, We did the Crans, Montana. That was our last live broadcast. Last one I did with you was from the hotel.
Right, right. And it was actually my first one I did on the road with the band, using the snowball here.
Yeah.
And this, in fact, we were at the bar you cleared me up about. But we actually chowed there. They
allowed us to eat there, so we didn't have to endure the stares of the other patrons.
Right. The snowball was... This USB mic we're using is quite engineered ergonomically in a trippy way, huh?
But that doesn't constitute a professional endorsement now, does it, Mike?
Did I say who made it?
No.
Okay. Then that will remain a secret. But it is a trippy looking thing, and so the swear johns might like whoa. And speaking of engineering, these pads we're in, we're at this place called... the Hotel
Palafitte.
Yeah, Palafitte. And this thing, now you know a little something about the history here.
I think that it's a series of what they call pavilions. They're sort of like modular, modern cabins. And they're right on the edge of the lake, and some of them are actually over the water.
Which is kind of a...
The only place
thing
in Europe where there's a hotel actually on the water.
I mean, with stilts, you know.
On stilts, and...
I think Gig and Ronnie...
Yeah, they got those. We were out.
We're backbenchers?
Well, no, they tried to, but they were already booked up.
Okay.
That's what I heard, anyhow. But it's beautiful lake, and we had... First couple of days, it was real stormy and cold, and sizable waves on a small lake.
Yeah,
well, the lake's about, what, 10 miles long or something?
Yeah, we're kind of on the north... west side of it.
Yeah. And today it was really sunny. So yeah, so we walked down into the town and we saw him. You know, we don't usually get to see him setting up the venue, you know, with all the lights still down on the ground and, you know.
Yeah, because we're going to play 2 days from now.
Yeah.
Now, the last gig, Crans, Montana, that was up in the mountains and that was snow. And in fact, me and Steve got up there via our first helicopter ride.
Oh, that was incredible. Just incredible. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Yeah, it was kind of a big one. Well, I think there was three in the front, or right?
Yeah, three in the
and
back.
Four.
Or maybe there was five of us. I think
it was a helper man with Henry, you, and myself.
And the pilot, and Ron, and Pop.
So seven of us.
Yeah.
And I think it was called a Eurocopter or something.
Yeah, well, there was like a... ordinarily, they used this helicopter for rescue missions. And the promoter was gracious enough to take us the second half of our drive from Geneva up to the... to the place, and we landed outside of a parking lot in a small patch of snow.
Yeah, we were going to land
in the parking lot, but the cars were too close.
It brought us right down in snow.
Yeah,
And we played in a big tent in snow, if you can imagine that. It was a pretty intense gig.
Intense.
It was intense. Intense. One big one. And it reminds me of the tent we saw being set up today.
Yeah.
It was down by the lake. And the marina was right close by. And then we walked to the center of town. And I had falafel.
Yeah. No, it was great. It looks like a great town. I'm going to go back there tomorrow, but I might take the bus, the public transportation, because my feet got tired on the way back.
We were out 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
And like three of those hours was hoofing.
But it's real nice to be able to take advantage of being fortunate enough to be able to travel like this and to spend. This time we were kind of cooling our heels here, but there's a lot worse places than Switzerland by a lake.
Yeah.
In a fabulous. Oh, yeah, the hotel was originally set up for as sort of like a prototype or a architectural model of a futuristic kind of thing for like a Siemens convention. Siemens, the electrical people.
Right. S-I-E-M-E-A-N-S.
Yeah, and you know, so there's like computers in every room, and you know, the big screen TV and electric everything. The shade, the electric shade in front of the deck, and the metal shutters that you can open and close, and all really modern and
it's
state of the art kind of stuff. I wouldn't mind having one of these. Or if you had like a couple, you could have like a real good pad. But even for one person, this would be ideal.
Yeah, it's really happening. And the big wind is, I mean, from roof to deck, pointing towards the lake.
Yeah,
pretty amazing. Also, for the first time, I got to paddle in Europe, and first time ever paddle on a lake. When it was really neat.
No, I'm sitting inside my little pavilion.
Yeah, that's what they call these.
Did we say the name of this place? The Hotel Palafitte? Yeah, we did.
What's that mean? You know some French. Palaf, maybe hill?
I don't know. Maybe it has something to do with pavilion, but that's a French word, but I don't know what.
Palo, the Spanish for hill.
Palafitte, I don't know. Doesn't have anything to do with Jean Lafitte, the pirate, though.
Or Lafitte Pincai, the jockey.
Oh, okay.
The oldest guy. He retired, but I won some races with Lafitte, and his nickname was Pirate.
Wow.
He was a classy cat, a gracious man. Those jockeys, brave little cats. But on this lake, like most lakes in Switzerland, big white swans. Amazing. Kind of ornery, though.
Yeah, no, and they're like, you know what, like 5 feet tall or something. they're like ostriches that swim or something.
Yeah, and fly a little bit, because three of them took off right in front of me. I fucking fucked up and didn't have fresh batteries and ran out of juice. But if I could have got a shot of this, I mean, they have to run like a duck to get up speed, and these are big. Beast, man, they were running, and then they just took off right in front of me.
That's all right. Maybe you'll see them tomorrow.
Yeah, right. I'm going to try and paddle. Hopefully the weather holds. Because the first 2 days, like you said, it was, man, I was looking at the water, and it was rougher than a lot of seas outside of Pedro in the open ocean. And it was very gray and everything, and all that blew out. In fact, there was something in the paper about snow. I mean, we're talking the end of May.
No, they had a freak snowstorm, and it closed down the railroad and the highways up in the peaks and the mountains and chain controls and all that.
Now, this is our, I mean, summer's not here yet, but Pertnir is. And Stooges have gigs all summer. And this was our first run in Europe.
After our American tour.
Right, right. Which was pretty neat. And me and Steve had planned on doing a radio show on that tour, but we never did. Our chamber, it was the back of the bus with Rosa. And the engine caused an interference because we transferred some songs to Steve's, and a huge whine was over everything from, you know, the probably ignition system, spark plug system. putting out this wee. So we ended up having to redo all his songs in Denver.
Right.
And we got that, his songs of yore, and we'll be playing some of that a little later. But the first gig, this first run, even though we're out 8 days, there's only two gigs. And the first one was the Pink Bop Festival in Holland, which turns out to be the oldest festival in Europe, 38 years now.
Wow.
And it's in the Limburg.
Down by Maastricht.
Right. Of Holland, which is like a little finger that goes into Belgium, the Walloon part of Belgium.
It's between Germany and Belgium.
Right. So it's not the part of Belgium that speaks Flemish like Dutch. It's the part that speaks French. This is the way Europe is, you know. They had weird borders. But it was a really good gig, especially the first one. And the band was tight. I mean, maybe some.
Well, you can call that up on that show is on YouTube,
right? There's several songs. I showed Steve the other day, or yesterday, and the our version of No Fun, where we invite the stage invasion. A couple Dutch dudes just had to have the pants down.
Yep, and they were not pixelated. Although it wasn't much to look at.
Yeah, the Dutch, like a lot of Europe, they're not too Puritan with the imagery. You know, with the free flag flying.
They didn't have the nude police there.
No. That was a good gig, especially first out of the gate, which is kind of scary.
Yeah.
I mean, our last gig before that was in Memphis.
That's right, for a Beale Street Festival.
Yeah, right by the Mississippi River. It's neat to have gigs by the water. But this, the Dutch one wasn't by the water. Except the day before, a lot of water came down from the sky, and we lucked out.
Yeah.
Because our day to play, sun was out big time. And you could tell by the ground being soaked and stuff that they took beat down to the pour.
Oh, they
down.
No, they wore wooden shoes. That's why they wear wooden shoes. Because you can wear the wooden shoes, you walk on the mud, and it doesn't get your feet wet.
Yeah, smart. That's smart. So then we came over here, and 4 days in the pavilion at Palafitte.
Yeah.
Hotel Palafitte. And the weather broke, the sun came out early.
We both have sunstroke now.
Right, but I forgot, going back to the Pink Pop gig, an old buddy of yours showed up, drove from his homeland, the Czech Republic.
Right, he was visiting his family ordinarily.
Right.
Because he now lives in the United States in isolated splendor in near Yucca Valley, California, in the Mojave Desert.
Not so isolated now.
It's like a, just sort of like a, I call him a Czech neck, like a Czech redneck.
So you guys can start investigating Yucca Valley and try to find his little pad.
Is it down 5 miles of the worst road you'll ever drive? That's right.
But his name is Camille.
Yeah.
And he's got a band here called
Kundahola and the Beachies.
Right.
And what's the title of this record that he put out? The Sad Songs of Kabul Abdul Jamal. Kabab what? Here. You got your glasses on, right?
Okay. Sad and Sobbing Songs of Jamil Abdul Kabab. And,
you'll be able to hear some of this. It's it's a great record. I hope he's able to get it distributed widely. But I know Iggy really liked it a lot, and hopefully he'll be able to open a show for us sometime.
He covered Steve McKay's song.
Yeah, you played that in your show before too, The Prisoner. He did a really good job with it too. I'm really pleased.
But the song you picked that we're going to play right now is
I Got a Ways to Go.
Right.
And he had some help writing that.
You know something about this one. He plays a lot of the stuff on this.
Cowboy Cowboy Nation. Music by Cowboy Nation and lyrics by Cowboy Nation and Kamielski.
Cowboy Nation.
Do you know that guy?
They're two brothers, Chip and Tony Kinman. They used to be, in the 70s, they had a punk band called The Dills.
Right.
And okay. It turned into Rank and File.
Okay, well, Camille's their bud.
A small fucking world. Those are buds of mine.
All right, there you go.
Tony was a big bass hero. In those days, his name was Tony 19.
Oh, okay.
It's like Tony 49 now.
Right.
But he's a great bass player and a great cat. And his brother Chip's got a new band called Pacific Coast Highway. In fact, he was having a gig the day I left, so I didn't get to see him. But Chip's got a new band. And I think him and Tony's got something. Maybe Cowboy Nation's still going. So, wow, they helped him write this tune.
I guess so, because I first heard the song a couple of years ago when I was with my buddies from Radon. And
which Camille is
part of. Camille is part of that whole endeavor. You know,
it's like a musical collective.
Yeah, and everybody's got their own things, but they play together whenever it works out. And
you've done several tours,
and he was starting to come up with these kind of more cowboy kind of songs and stuff. I mean, he does "King of California" by Dave Alvin.
Yeah,
it's on this another record of mine too
from the Blasters.
Yeah, and
God damn,
he was doing that. And I heard him play that in Portugal, and I played it with him, and it was great. And we did, but we
you know I got to play with Camille.
That's
at
right,
Grand Bronca Symphony 13 Symphony for.
I saw the group photo, and you can pick the two of you guys out. You're over in the bass section, and he's one of the guitars, the specially tuned guitars.
Right.
I think they're all tuned to his strings are all tuned to the same note or something.
Yeah, I think there are three heavy ones, three lighter ones, all tuned to B.
Yeah,
and there were 64 guitars in three sections.
How many basses?
Baritone, tenor, and alto, and 20 basses, and one drummer.
Wow.
And four movements. It's quite a piece. I think Glenn's going to do it in Dublin and London next. And if I got time, I would like to make one. It is a beautiful thing. It was March of last year. Two intense days of prac. Really intense. And then the day of the gig at the Disney Music thing downtown.
Oh, that new theater, Frank Gehry thing.
Yeah, right. My mom and my sister came and they had to wear, I mean, it was a blast. There's nothing like bass guitars.
So did everybody have
their seconds?
Did everybody have their own amplifier?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. So they just brought whatever they had? It's like,
I didn't bring my whole big thing.
Yeah.
But I was part of a team.
So there were some Fenders and Marshalls.
There were sections of five, so there's four sections of basses. And so the guitars are in sections of five. So, yeah, it was incredible. John Meyer conducting and Virgil Moorhead on drums. Oh, wow, to keep that together. And, of course, politically, I put my chair right next to the drummer, right next to Virgil, you know, so I could hear the beat no matter what. And John, a great conductor, counted on every bar of every measure. So, because, you know,
How long of a piece?
4 minutes. Oh, 70 minutes.
Wow.
Maybe. Four movements. And, man, you had to be there. You had to be there right in the thing. Because it changed a lot and had some really trippy parts. Like I said, flatted seconds on the bass.
Yeah. that's the note you're not supposed to play. That's right, isn't it? Like, they all work except for that one. So
you know, with the root.
Yeah.
So you got a chord going there. So it's like boom, 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 boom. There's you can hear some
waves,
some notes in the waves. So, but we should play Camille's song here. This is "I Got a Ways to Go" by Kunda Hala and the Beaches.
Do we want to tell them what Kunda Hala means?
Yeah, it's a well. No,
right.
Ask your Czech friends.
That's right.
They'll know.
Very good.
Okay, Wafa from Pedro show.
One more version.
Uno más.
Uno más, motherfuckers.
Thank you. us are heading for the east. Soon the 100 moms are gonna have to leave. The bottle gives me comfort, I keep it in my bag. Should have been at home, but I must have hit a snack, yeah.
I'm
Listeners should be in total dark, preferably blindfolded in order to avoid any visual distraction, and let the hearing be the only brain stimulator. Headphones are also a must to reduce to a minimum the physical distance with the music. It really enhances the experience. There is a story behind it, but I'd suggest that it is revealed after listening, not before, just to let you experience your own story first. the take on the story of the last song. A man wakes up after having been sedated with some drugs. He finds himself struggling in a swimming pool. The pool has been covered with bricks, and while this happens, the man inevitably drowns. In a room, the people that sedated him had recorded the sound of the man's death, for that they put microphones inside his body, and that is what you hear in the piece. His heartbeat, his blood streaming through his veins, and his breath getting distorted as he draws. It was a dream, or rather a nightmare.
Thank you, Steve, for
sure
prefacing that tune and then letting people know it was up. Yeah, the story behind it. See, it would have been fucked up if we would have told you the story before.
Yeah.
And then he wouldn't have gave you the instructions. You wouldn't know how to absorb it. So I hope everybody had their blindfolds on. That was RTM3H2O by Zip. And before that, we had a... Oh, let me turn this mic. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to bogart the mic there, Steve. We got a song that, from you, from your songs of yore.
Oh, yeah. It's called Song for Baghdad.
Yeah.
And I think I put that together on my little four-track back in 1991, before the first Gulf War. It was like about one day before we started bombing. And I had no idea what to expect. I just knew something was going to be bad, and I had no idea it would be that bad.
Right. And that's you on everything.
Yeah.
So Steve McKay does more than saxophone is what we're trying to say here.
There's keyboards and my old drumulator.
Right.
Leon.
And in fact, last show I played a song where you were playing, you were singing and used a sampler. Right?
Which
Stradivarius Cat?
Yeah, I used a sampler of like a little plastic recorder. And then my dear departed friend, Gatto the Cat.
Right, right.
Who passed away a couple years ago at the ripe old age of 19.
Gatto.
Yeah. Was Gatto Barbieri, he was named after, you see.
Okay.
Not just like, whoa, gong, cat in Spanish. No, we're talking about, like, he was named after a saxophone player.
Right. And, in fact, this Songs of Yore has Steve on guitar, all kinds of stuff. It's a very interesting record. We'll be playing more songs from that. And we started that bit off with I Got a Ways to Go by Kundahala and the Bee Gees. Shit. Do you have now, lately, Steve McKay Recordings, you've got a record that came out through the Radon Collective.
Michigan and Arcturus, yeah.
Right.
And then that was following the first one, which was basically...
En Voyage.
En Voyage, which was a bunch of stuff from 77 to 88 or something like that, you know.
I think the first tune I played from that was Lameda.
Right. Right,
that was right when you gave it to me.
I think I recorded that in 77. It was like...
We were actually living in Lameda.
Yeah, that's right.
Which, for you people who don't know, it's the town next to Pedro, just north of us. So Steve hasn't always been a NorCal guy. He had a stint in West Hollywood at the Tropicana.
Yeah, I lived in Santa Monica for about nine
months. Santa Monica.
Played in a beach bum band there and played with Catfish Hodge down there and got to sit in with jam with all kinds of famous people and stuff during that time. So that was good.
And then also lived in Lameda.
Yeah.
So three stints in SoCal before being a...
Plus that part of my childhood I spent in Coronado.
Right. Coronado. Wow.
And Navy, sort of a sure. Navy grandchildren brat, you know.
But I've been in NorCal many years. He's
a
Michiganer, but moved many years ago to NorCal.
30 years ago.
Right. Wow. And was in the city a while, San Francisco, but as of how many years now?
5 years in Pacifica.
5 years in Pacifica.
Yeah.
Which for you people, it's actually on the Pacific Ocean because the city is in the bay.
Yeah, it's just 10 miles south. It's right next door just south of Daly City, for those of you who are up in your geography. Famous cities of the North Peninsula, right?
So, the weather's a little calmer than Michigan. Grand Rapids, to be specific, but then moved to Ann Arbor, which is where he started playing with the Stooges.
Yeah.
Right. We went over a lot of Stooges history in Crans, Montana with Scotty.
Yeah.
Scotty was very articulate.
Oh, yeah. He had a lot to say, and, you know, a lot of the time, because he only says something when he means to say something, and he doesn't yammer like I've been known to.
Oh, you were articulate, too, though. And we're missing Scotty here.
Yeah.
He is in Amsterdam.
Yeah. Yeah, he's taking advantage of these days off to go to one of his favorite cities.
Right. But we'll see him... When's he come? Friday or Thursday?
I hope tomorrow. He comes tomorrow. Yeah. I don't think he's going to come in the day of the show. He should come in the day before the show. Yeah. So we'll be seeing him tomorrow.
He'll rejoin. And he's kind of somebody who's a center. It's kind of weird not having Scotty with us.
Yeah, we've missed
We're
him terribly.
A center.
Yeah.
A mooring. So he'll join us. He was in Aachen, I think.
Yeah, he was staying in Aachen because his daughter and his partner were into seeing a lot of the other acts at the show, so he helped facilitate that.
Right, he was at Pink Pop the day before.
Yeah, and the day after, too, I think.
Right. Scotty Festival Man.
Yeah, he's digging it, too. He's been learning a lot about current bands that I know nothing of from his daughter. Yeah.
Right. You could learn us all a bunch on that. We got a couple more minutes left in the first hour here. You know some French.
Oui.
Now, there's Swiss French. Do you detect a difference when you're speaking it and listening to these people?
The only difference I detect is that they say 80 is octante instead of 80, which means 420s, which is how French do it, which is like kind of archaic. And then 90, they say nonant, as opposed to 90 or 420s 10. So like in French, 99 would be 99, which would be 420s 10 and 9. It's kind of like, you know, when you're counting on your fingers. It's harder than other languages in that respect, but in Switzerland they're more logical, and they came up with a regular thing like this, like 80 90, you know. But I don't speak French well enough to be able to discern a particularly like a Swiss accent or something like that, and they seem to understand me as well as they do in Paris. Then they might be nicer about it. but because
French people dig it though when you speak in French.
Oh yeah, they're kind of surprised, you know. They're kind of surprised. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to have been able to live there, you know, and spend, you know, weeks on end not speaking English, and just the immersion is the best way, you know. I had it in school too, so. Certain amount.
It paid off.
I did years and years.
See,
later.
The things you get out of school.
Yeah, no. The first time I was in a place that spoke French, they were giving us this is with Commander Cody, and they were giving us a chicken dinner at some festival, and I needed a napkin. And I asked for, you know, avez-vous une serviette? And they gave me a napkin. Yeah, and that means a napkin. And they gave me a napkin. And they says, wow, this shit really works.
Okay, we're at the end of the first hour of the May 30, 2007 Watt for Pedro show. Hold tight for hour two. May 30th, 2007. It's the second hour of the Watt from Pedro show.
Just like your tennis, it's metal. look like some poor people, but we're the white kettle. And you know we would never see with integrity better. Now here's something to remember.
Ground.
not in it. Oh, covered in blood. And I guess he won't be fucking. That old Arab no more.
Watt from Pedro show. That was Noise Flower by... No, it wasn't. It was Tin Can by Noise Flower. You got it written backwards here, Steve.
Oh, okay.
The song's
I'm
called
fired.
Tin Flower. No, it's okay. It's called Tin Can, the song. And then Noise Flower's a band.
Oh.
No disrespect there, out there. And before that, we heard another Camille song.
King of California.
Right, Kundalhalla and the Bee Gees. And that's just another song you picked. Right?
Yes.
And what you know about that one?
Well, that's the... I was saying that was the first... that was the first song I heard when Camille went into his kind of cowboy phase. I think he started like spending a lot of time out in the desert by himself. But he came up with that. It's a cover of a Dave Alvin song. Although okay. he's kind of tweaked the lyrics a little bit.
Right. And we start out the second hour with
Introduction by Kawaii Kato Baka Baka, which means cute but stupid.
Okay. And that was the name of the band.
Yes.
The song is called Introduction. Tell us how you met Camille.
Well, I met him through my connections with Radon. And I originally started out playing with Radon people with... let's see. Liquor Ball, which is a band out of California, and they were the original Radon artists, I think. And they got called to play a festival in Athens, Georgia, which is where they met Scott Neidegger, who's got his own band, Sakara. And I played with them too, but anyhow, I started doing stuff with the Radon guys at our friend Marlon's house parties that he had down in San Jose and Kundalhalla.
San Jose for you other people.
And Kundalhalla was there. Kundalhalla and the Bee Gees was there. And now Kamielski is pretty much...
Solamente?
Maybe solo most of the time, but back then he had a couple of his Czech friends with him, and they did everything from scratch and DJ to surround sound electronics and various songs and stuff. And
is there a Florida connection?
Yeah, somehow Kamielski lived in Florida for a while. Yeah, Florida and Georgia, and like I said, now he's out of
but he's originally a Czech.
Yeah, he actually did a couple years prison time in Czech for like knocking over the statue of Lenin in the town square. And when the Velvet Revolution happened, Havel let him out of prison.
Yeah.
And so he's much respected in that country. And as he tells me, people in Czech are way into American cowboy music. Really, it's true. They have been for a long time. So
Europe's always had a country western thing.
Yeah, no, I remember playing with Commander Cody, Marlboro International Festival of Country Music.
Where?
Oh, all over Europe. We played in,
a lot of Germany.
In Frankfurt, yeah, and they had all these Marlboro banners hanging around the side, and it was all red, white, and black, and if you squinted your eyes, you got real nervous. You know, we're playing country music on the same stage where a guy named Adolf used to sell out shows. and they'd say, right in the middle of the front of the stage, you'd say, these are the same boards. But yeah, they like country a lot. They like country. It's like the idealized version of the United States that everybody, you know, is much better in its, you know, lore than... It's lore of yore, if you will, than it sometimes can be to really experience. But
speaking of songs of yore, we're going to play another song of yours. What do you want to play next?
Oh, wow. Okay. Let's look here. Let's do Dead Chevys.
Yeah, tell us about that one.
It's just, guess it's a song about, it's sort of like America in the persona of a car.
And when did you do it?
Oh boy, I wrote that, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. And I just never really performed it. I recorded it myself, and never really did it live, but I'm going to put it, get some people to help me play it live and you know, do a proper recording of it.
But and you play guitar?
In this particular one, I'm playing keyboards and saxophone.
Okay.
And the drum machine.
Now, because I know some of the songs on there you play guitar. And what song did you learn guitar on? Loose?
Yeah. I was down there in L.A. recording the Funhouse album, and the security guard at the Tropicana offered up for sale, sight unseen, a guitar for $10, and I bought it. And it was like a, you know, F-hole 335 kind of a guitar that you didn't have to plug in, and I just tried to copy what Ronnie was doing on the guitar to start out with, like, you know, maybe if I could play rhythm guitar in this band, they wouldn't fire me so soon. But
now you play robot drums, but you actually...
I can play the drums, sort of, yeah.
And you were a Stooges drummer.
Yeah, that was that famous awful experience of trying to play with the Stooges. But
what was that about?
The boys in the band, I think I told you this story already.
Yeah, I know, but these cats ain't heard.
Yeah, they... It was quite a while after I had made my exit or been exited from the Stooges, but we still were pals, and they did a gig one night in Detroit, and they were coming back, and Scotty and a couple of the guys in the crew drove under the Ann Arbor's famous Washington Street Railroad overpass, which is 10 feet 6 inches, and the truck was 12 feet tall. So you can imagine what happened, you know.
In the windshield.
Yeah, nobody got thrown from it, I don't think, but
the heads went through.
Heads went through the windshield, and lips were bitten, and noses were broken. And so they said, well, Steve, I remember the time you played drums at our rehearsal in New York when Scotty didn't show up, so perhaps you can play the drums. And so I sat there and had songs run by me, and I tapped out the rhythms on top of an amplifier while Ronnie played, you know, an unplugged electric guitar, and I'd tap out something, and they'd say, that's fine, and as it turns out, it wasn't fine. So
the gig?
Yeah, so Iggy repeatedly would come back, grab the drumsticks out of my hand, and give me what the beat was in the tom-tom, and then I would try to make my way through it. And I made my way through the set. These are in the days when everybody in the audience loved to heap abuse upon him, so... It was perfect. I got my $50, and like the guy, one of the production guys at the East Town in Detroit said, "Steve, don't worry, this is the hardest gig you'll ever play," and I think it was.
Okay.
But they haven't asked me to play drums with them again. So.
Okay, but there's robot drums here.
Yeah. I programmed this entire song from front to back, and in doing so, I think I ended up using up a large portion of the memory in that old drumulator, but that was the first really decent drum machine. But you get it, and it doesn't have a button to push. You have to make it do everything that it does, and then it remembers that. So I ended up using some of those segments on other songs later because I ran out of memory, and I didn't trust the idea of loading it all into a cassette in case I lost it. And now it's sitting on my shelf because the bass drum chip went out, and, well, that's too bad. It's like...
You'll just play it analog-wise.
Yeah, just, you know, find a drummer, a real drummer. That would be good. I wish I was more than one person sometimes, because it would be real easy because I'd know how to play all the parts without having to teach anybody anything.
Okay, here's Steve McKay with the Dead Chevys, Bob from Pedro Show.
The line in 60. 69, the flagship of the fleet. Your destiny, a daily drive down safe suburban streets. With your rich Rhodesian chromium and solid U.S. steel. Somewhere a war was going on while you slept at the wheel. You thought that you were looking good, but whoo, there goes the neighborhood.
Dead Chevys, dead Chevys.
The steering wheel went haywire first, kept up pulling to the right. And you guzzled up a lot of gas to drive that thing all night. You had a little accident a few years down the road, and that is how you ended up shot full of bullet holes. Welcome to your brand new war, brought to you by Bud and Coors and all those
dead Chevys.
Out who's driving, but there's too many hands on the wheel. I guess that's why it isn't surprising that they sold us down the highway in a long done deal.
Yeah.
from Pedro show. That was Eagle by Ryan Kunimara. Before that, we had Moonrise in Chechen by Mahiruno. Sorry. And we started off that little block with Dead Chevys by Steve McKay. Now, Steve, when you're playing sax with the Stooges, is it like playing sax with Radon, or is it like playing sax with Steve McKay solo?
No, it's like playing with the Stooges. So it's a certain kind of a, you know, I get my solos, but I'm also kind of adding to the texture of the thing. And Radon, well, we're starting to get more into actual tunes and such, but that was pretty much, we would title them after we'd play them, you know, and just make up any kind of title for it.
Because as you were playing them, it was improvised?
Yes. Yeah, in other words...
And how did that work? Did, like, some guy start a phrase or a motif?
Yeah, there'd be something, certain, like, themes or sub-themes that I would kind of throw in. Some of those are starting to repeat themselves and such, so...
And then the band would pick up on that and bounce off it?
Yeah, you know, so you'd have, like, just start out quiet and then, you know, rise and fall and then... I don't know, after 45 minutes or something, I fall down on the stage like I'm dead, and then everybody knows they're supposed to stop then. But they don't always do.
So the gig's one tune?
Generally, yeah. Or one
with
piece,
different
yeah.
movements.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, and it can start out very subtly, but then if you're playing with somebody like Scott Neidegger, he might be like piling up the chairs and taping them together to himself and others with duct tape and things like that. I think he taped me to a young lady who was miming a certain act upon me, even though my pants were on.
Okay.
And I didn't ask for that, and at the same time, I thought it was good theater.
Okay. And the last Radon record? The most recent release?
Oh, by myself? That's the Tunnel Diner.
No, Radon the Collective.
We came out with a sampler in 2006 with a bunch of things on it. But I think Sakara is coming out with it with a new album. They worked pretty hard on actually rehearsing, which they never did before.
Are you on any of
no,
that?
No, I'm not on that. That's Scott Neidegger, and then
so that's friend. Through the Collective, but not actually the Collective.
Well, it's members of the Collective. In other words, in different configurations.
What's the website?
RadonCollective.org.
Spell?
RadonCollective.org.
Yeah, thanks. So people can get information.
Yeah, they've got information about the Kundahola and Sakara and 36. That's... Sam Loman.
Yeah.
And he calls himself 36 because phonetically in Japanese, Sam Loman means 36 in Japanese.
Is that right?
That's what he told me. Yeah, he lived in Japan for several years. So.
The name of your latest record through the Collective?
Well, that's Michigan and Arcturus.
It's a street? It's an intersection.
Well, in my mind, it was an intersection, but I know it's when I asked the stars one night, where do I come from? And the voice inside my head said, Michigan and Arcturus, which means I'm sort of a hybrid, I guess. At least I hope I am. That might explain some of the weird thoughts I get. But.
Is there a picture of the street signs?
Well, I mentioned it, that the concept would look good as a as an intersection street sign.
And someone made that be so.
Yeah, the first version of the cover had actual, like, you know, two directions, it was like somewhere in Italy where they did that one. The next one was done somebody put it together, a skyscraper in Portugal or something, but with European thing where like Michigan was to the left and Arcturus was straight up. Or straight through, yeah.
Straight through.
But I always thought Michigan and Arcturus sounded like a intersection in the industrial part of Santa Monica. Because I know there's a Michigan Street, but for all I know there's
right,
Arcturus.
There is.
Yeah. For all I know, there's an Arcturus Street.
There's a whole area of Santa Monica that all the streets are states.
Yeah, yeah. So kind of over towards West LA and such. Yeah.
Right, right. When you were with Commander Cody.
Yeah, 5 years.
Yeah, but I mean the sax playing with that.
Yeah.
The Radon Contrast Studios.
Oh yeah, that was you know, once again I was like, that was more. Well, they did do my song "Go to Hell" and. They did "Going to New Jersey" as well, which maybe we'll have a chance to listen to a version of. But I want to record that again.
But was your playing a little more trad?
Country, you know, kind of more country oriented. That was a
country with the sax, isn't that?
Yeah, it was common. The live shows were great. Yeah, that's
how. No,
that's,
but it's not that common.
No,
most country bands don't have a sax.
No, it's like Boots Randolph is all I can think of. But that was real good for me because I had to play a lot of 16th notes, and so da 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 da. Well, that translates really good into being able to at least BS my way through some bebop, you know,
yeah.
and get my
but
chops.
But you did
over
some bebop with the Carnal.
Carnal Kitchen, yeah. That was. I wasn't nearly as rapid with that, but you know,
younger.
We did some jazz.
But didn't you later version of the band work up quite a?
Well, the later last version of yeah. Carnal Kitchen, we were doing like jazz modern jazz standards kind of things, or
yeah, Coltrane, so that took some
Coltrane songs. Well, that was like yeah, you know. Laboriously reading charts and taking a long time to learn songs and such.
Who put that band together?
It was me and my buddy Marco J, and he played the drums, and we just started out as two of us, and we used to be like a pretty unstructured thing, like the Pied Piper. We'd start playing, or we'd go to a gig, and then all these other people would show up to sit in with us.
But was this sort of like a Radon collective?
Yeah, it was very similar in a sort of way.
Wasn't that a trippy old life?
Yeah, no, it was very interesting, the fact that it was like that, you know, and I was playing that kind of music when Iggy heard me.
Right,
and decided that I would be a good addition to the things he was trying to do at the time, like Funhouse in 1970.
Right. We're going to play some more stuff from your Yard thing. And there's a period where you're like kind of doing songs.
Yeah, so.
With a bass player woman.
Oh, it's my ex-wife, Annie. Yeah.
And because that's a different kind of period. You're doing like songs that are very structured. It's in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
late 80s.
What song you want to play from that? What do you got, Precious Time?
Yeah, actually, that's one that she's on. We could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would
because
be really
that's
good.
A different type of thing than the Collective or the Stooges.
Yeah, it's a
or
kind
Cody.
Of a pop song kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, let's do
so
that.
So what was that like, playing gigs in that mode?
It was, we, you know, sometimes it ended up with just being me and her because there was kind of a perpetual conflict of personalities with her and other people. But for a while we were up to four people. We had a multi-instrumentalist guy that played sax and keyboards and a little guitar, and we had a drummer. And we played a lot of clubs in the late 80s in the Bay Area and up in Mendocino County and here and there. And it was all right, but it became more and more difficult as my marriage started to dissolve and things got harder to do. And so I just kind of put that on the shelf. But I want to bring back the concept of Carnal Kitchen and, you know, do some more structured songs.
Okay.
You know, get a, you know, regular kind of rock band thing going. So I'm not sure. It'd be interesting to see who's interested in listening to that. But that's why I need to get some other musicians, because nobody wants to hear me stand up there and play the guitar and sing a song, which I can do just fine. But, you know, they want to have that saxophone on the songs.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
People, you know.
Well,
and I'd rather,
one good thing about Bay Area is there's a lot of cats playing.
No, I've got some people in mind right now, and people have expressed an interest in helping me out. So I'm going to be working on that in the months to come.
Okay. Well, you got time. Let's listen to Precious Time.
Okay.
Okay.
precious time. Day and night we fight and fight about what is and hers and yours and mine.
Wasting all my precious time. Yes, I'm wasting my time. Yes, I'm wasting all my precious time. Wasting all my very precious time. I was dying, dying every single day. Oh, I'm wasting all my precious time. All my precious time. Cause it's a mean old town and it brings me down, and you have to stand in lines of every kind. I'm wasting all my precious time. Yes, I'm wasting my time. Yes, I'm wasting all my precious time. Tick a 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 time. Give you the time of day. Oh, wasting all my precious time.
Thank you.
That was Steve McKay and Carnal Kitchen, the Bay Area, San Francisco version of Precious Time. We're at the end of the second hour on the May 30, 2007 Watt from Pedro show. Hang tight for hour three. May 30th, 2007, it's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro show. Pedro Show. We start out the third hour with The Prisoner, but you put by Steve McKay.
Oh no, that's right, that's Gundahola. I wrote it.
It's Gundahola and the Bee Gees. But Steve McKay wrote that song.
So at least I had to get that in there. I'm very eager to do that, I guess.
And then we, what did we hear after that?
We heard Fang Call and Piz by C. Lee Clark and the Swing Pins. And then we heard Aluminum by Plus Eight.
Right. Now, yeah, you wrote that song, The Prisoner. Prisoner, rather. Not The Prisoner. That was...
Well, I called it The Prisoner, but Camille calls it Prisoner. So there you have it.
Camille scissored the "the."
He scissored the "the," and he changed a couple of notes, but I still delighted with the treatment and honored to have someone of his stature cover one of my songs.
Yeah, now how'd that collaboration come about?
In a situation very similar to things that you and I have done, he came over to my house with his Apple computer and a really nice microphone, and he recorded me playing some songs on the guitar. But I think I actually did a recording of the song myself and sent him a cassette to his post office box in Yucca Valley. So maybe that's how he got a hold of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I approached you with the idea of a...
He said he wanted to do it, and I said, great. And that's gotten some... It's gotten some play on WFMU, and now it's getting play on your show. So,
does it have any connection with the Patrick McGuin, the television show? Are you familiar with that show?
Yes, I am. Now, it's basically just an "Oh Woe Is Me, I'm So Miserable" song that I wrote in 15 minutes one day when I was feeling "Oh Woe Is Me, I'm So Miserable." You know, but. It does have, you know, it has resonance for everyone, I think.
Is it a wallow tune?
It's a wallow, that's it, we wallow. Yes, I wake each day before the dawn and curse the rising sun as the jailer and his prisoner are recognized as one.
Did you ever read Kafka, In the Penal Colony?
I didn't read that one, no.
Yeah, he's in charge of this torture execution machine, and it's been decided this is kind of out of date, so it's got to go. So, of course, he gets into the machine. He's the last honoree
of the old machine.
Yeah, and the machine would, like, it had needles and stuff, and it would put a word, you know, summing up your punishment and yeah, articulating it for the people and the prisoner, or the not prisoner, because the guy, well, he was a prisoner, but he's the executionee,
right?
And yeah, he doesn't want to. He's got no gig without the machine, so he's going to go out with it.
Oh, all right. Yeah.
So he becomes one.
There we go. That's good. I'll have to read that sometime. Okay. I must have been channeling him and I didn't know it.
But you're familiar with Kafka.
Yes.
Yeah. A Czech writer.
There you go.
Right. Kamilsky would be
another Czech writer.
Into that. Yeah.
But you don't write no bad Czechs.
There's a great writer that I've been reading lately named Milan Kundera. And was telling you about him. He made a movie of one of his books, Incredible Lightness Speed.
Right, I think I saw that movie, actually.
But the one I really liked was... he didn't like that. In fact, he talks about it in this book I really like by him called Immortality. And a big premise of the book is a book can never be a movie. But if they were going to make a movie, they should have made it out of Immortality. That's what he states. But he says the novel is just such a unique vehicle in itself that it has things that a movie can't capture. It has too many nooks and crannies and alleys and things that film can't convey. And in fact, his most recent book is him musing on what he believes a novel is. It's called The Curtain, and it's great. So if you people are hankering for somebody you ain't read, and you dig it. might dig something I dig. Check out The Curtain. Or Immortality.
There's that word again, check out.
Very good.
No, that's good. I'm looking forward to that.
Okay. Now we're going to play a tune of yours that you perform called Carbondale.
Right. Yeah, and that was another song that was written before the beginning of the first Gulf War, but it maintained its relevance through to the next Iraq War. And sort of basically, I'm a little hard on my fellow countrymen, and they're actually coming around to my way of thinking a lot more than I ever thought, even in places like Carbondale. But
which is in Illinois?
Well, there's a Carbondale in lots of places, but as I say in the song, it's in Carbondale and Cloverdale and Annandale and Chippendales, etc., you know. So you find it everywhere. And
have you been to a Chippendales?
No. No, I say, they wouldn't hire me.
They didn't have a color that would fit you.
Yeah, they didn't. They didn't have a. I was a little too big for the little short shorts too.
So yeah, the story behind this song.
Yeah, just I was in Carbondale one time playing with Commander Cody, and I think I went to a bar with some girl, and I was like trying to impress her, and I told her that I had been a draft dodger in the Vietnam War, and a fellow overheard me and told me that I was really lucky that he didn't beat the hell out of me because he was a Vietnam veteran. And I apologized, but I always remembered that, buddy, don't go saying that in Carbondale.
And so you wrote a song about it.
Yeah, but it's not about that event, but it's about, like, yeah.
It was
being in a small town and speaking out against the war and being perceived as unpatriotic.
Right. Okay. Well, here you go. Steve McKay at Carbondale.
Christ. track. She really puts them down, and she got
Watt from Peter show. What did we hear there, Steve?
Well, you heard from me first. It's my song Carbondale, and I am playing a couple of guitars, sort of, on that one. And
No sax.
No, well, see, that's why I need to get a guitar player, because I've got a really good solo in mind. Sort of a country western, you know, Heendecker kind of a thing. You know about Heendecker music, don't you?
No.
Heendecker, 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 Heendecker. I got to give my buddy Bill Kirchen credit for that. Like, anyhow, that was Carbondale, followed by Derby Girl by Gary Celebrity. And next song was Words and Actions by Puzzle. And then Twinkie Defense by the Nothing People. We were talking about Twinkie Defense. That was the famous case of Dan White, the San Francisco supervisor, who...
murdered the mayor.
He murdered Harvey Milk. Yeah, he was... Dan didn't like gay people very much. And he got really disgusted with his job, and he was like running a French fry stand or something in his spare time, because back then they only paid supervisors like about $13,000 a year. It was like a rich man's thing, and he was like a former policeman and didn't have a lot of money, and so he quit because he couldn't afford to be a San Francisco supervisor. And then he asked for his job back, and the mayor, Moscone, said, "Forget it, pal."
Moscone?
Yeah, he was the mayor. And then he also murdered Harvey Milk, the first gay supervisor in San Francisco. He killed both
of them.
Right.
That's
right. And he snuck in the basement with a gun, told the janitor some BS. And this is before they had metal detectors there anyhow, but he came around. And then he spent 7 years in prison.
Well, there was a trial.
And as their defense, they offered what they called the Twinkie defense, which is saying that he was eating so much junk food and sugar that it made him crazy, which it probably did. You know, it'd be a bunch of Twinkies and like a whole lot of coffee, probably, you know, and drove him to murder. But they didn't buy that, and he still ended up with only 7 years in prison for a double murder. And when he got out, nobody wanted him to live anywhere. He didn't want to live in San Francisco. There was some talk of him being able to live in Ireland, but they didn't necessarily want him. And finally, he had a house in San Francisco, and he went home and he hung himself in his garage.
Damn.
Yep. So justice was served there, and it was really a shame because...
by him?
Yeah. Too bad for San Francisco, and it was a terrible, terrible time.
Yeah. How long ago was that?
Oh, that was 1978, I think. Yeah, I'd been in the city for about a year or something. I remember going to the memorial service. I had a gay friend and went with him and his buddies, and you know, we watched Dianne Feinstein had become the mayor. Now she's a senator from California. She had become the mayor, and I saw her sitting there looking out at all these people, and you could just see the look in her eyes was like, what the heck, how the heck am I going to do this job now? But,
right.
Yeah, that was a tragic time.
There's a Moscone Center now
across
the street from them.
Yep.
SF MoMA.
Yep, yeah, big convention center.
I was just there when we played on Iggy's birthday at the Warfield. I went and saw SF MoMA, and they had a show on Picasso's and how he influenced people. So they had some Jasper Johns and some Jackson Pollocks.
Well, that sounds like a great show.
You could see in Roy Lichtenstein, you could see the Picasso, some of his works, the ideas spun off in these guys, these U.S. painters. It was a trip. You know, I don't know a lot about art, but I'm trying to learn. My friend Raymond Pettibone is in Venice, Italy now.
Oh, really?
Getting ready for a big show. Yeah, Raymond always goes early because the gallery where they show, he likes paint on the walls and stuff.
Excellent.
And then they paint over it when the show's done. So those works are like... Like, I remember I went
ephemeral
to...
Ephemeral works, they call those.
Ephemeral?
Ephemeral, which so means like they're here and then they're gone.
Right. I remember there was one in Santa Monica the Bergamot Station, and he had this whole thing of a Sphinx. You know, he drew it on the wall. He said, Raymond, it's going to get painted over with, and you put all this time into it. And he goes, you know, pshaw. What about the real work? How much time did they put into that?
Right.
So he had a good point. Raymond just drew me an ink thing of, Steve McQueen in the Sand Pebbles.
All right.
The Spinnenori Project.
That's one of your favorite films, I know that.
Yeah. And Steve McQueen was famous for his squint. You know, he had that squint. And so he drew it with him, doing the squint. He did a movie in San Francisco. Bullet?
Oh, yeah. That
was famous chase scene?
Famous chase scene. And if you live in San Francisco, when they do the famous chase scene, it jumps from one side of town to the other. They actually had an article in the Sunday paper where they broke it down into the different shots and they explained from which neighborhood it would go. So they'd be on Russian Hill and all of a sudden they're down in McLaren Park on the south side of the city.
You know. So that was some Mustang he was driving.
Yeah, and the other guy was
one scene.
Dodge Charger.
Right. There's one scene where he takes off a door. And that wasn't in the script. Somebody had come onto the set and opened the door up. And he left it in the film.
Well, the door was some parked car? That was part, what?
Somebody came onto the set and parked the car was getting out while they're filming the
thing. Oh, no.
But, yeah.
You always have to watch opening your door in San Francisco, though. Somebody will take your door off of it. Almost had that happen to me with a Muni bus one day.
I got doored on my bicycle.
Oh, that's another good one, yeah.
That's when I painted the helmet orange. After that one. San Francisco has an intense bicycle scene. They have this thing called Critical Mass.
Right.
Have you experienced any of those?
I've been around it. I haven't ridden in it, but it's...
They kind of take over the streets?
It's the last Friday of every month, and... So everybody's downtown and they're trying to get out of the city, and you know the people on the bicycles, you know, rode their bikes to work or something, or they ride their bikes to work every day, but they all leave at the same time and then block traffic and cause all kinds of problems, and they just did that in Berkeley too.
Okay.
Okay, we just listened to My Crippled Smile by Mongoloid. Before that was Like You by Yokozuna. Before that was Daniel Johnston by Android Hero. Before that was Lunchtime by Three Armed Slave. And we began that last run with Omega by Yuri Gagarin. We remember him, don't we? He was the cosmonaut. I didn't know he was still in the music biz.
He's first man in space.
First man in space.
I think he was killed in a plane crash.
Isn't that ironic?
Yeah.
That's too bad. Well, we'd like to send our respects to the Gagarin family.
Right.
And it's been a real pleasure being with you.
Oh, yeah, Steve, of course. He even orbited. I think our first two guys didn't even orbit.
No, he orbited, yeah. We just did suborbitals.
Right. One of them pissed his pants. Like they were sitting, there was problems on the pad. Maybe it was Shepard, Alan Shepard. And, they didn't think of, because the flight was, 18 minutes or something.
Right.
They're sitting on the pad so long up there, they didn't think of, what does an astronaut do?
Right. Now they have the famous Foley catheter. Those are the same people that make turkey basters, too, by the way. So if you go to the hospital and they say Foley, you know what you're in for.
Oh,
it's not Thanksgiving.
And the better thing is when they take them out.
Ow.
Because there's I had my illness. There's a marble-like thing on the other side of the bladder wall to keep it from coming out. And it's amazing how, it's like a golf ball size or something, really. And it was amazing how that thing came out. The doctor, his name was Ko, he's a Korean young man, interned, and he got me to laugh. And so I didn't know it was coming, and he yanked that thing out like he was starting a lawnmower.
Best to get it over with.
And then he quickly gathered it behind his back so I couldn't see it, but I did see it because it was amazing. You can't believe that motherfucker came through the piss hole or pipe. It ain't just a hole. Well, the one in the bladder wall was more the one I used to fill the piss bag.
Mm-hmm.
Because the other one was just a block while it healed. But
yeah.
Then round two came in to pull that one out, and I was kind of ready for it, but...
I hate it when that happens. That happened to me one time, and it was no fun. So, anyhow, you guys and gals, just take care of yourselves.
Yeah,
and
gals, I wonder how to...
Same difference.
Shorter urethra. That's why they get the bladder infections easier. Look, Steve, it's been righteous having you aboard.
I'm glad we could have a little medical discussion at the
to close end. It up.
Yeah, that's good.
Is it a closer?
Yeah, I think when we sign off, I'm going to walk down the hall and take care of some business.
The hall, the deck, these pavilions.
That's right, the deck of the pavilion to the head. I'm going to the head, Skipper.
Anyway, it was righteous having you aboard. And, thanks so much for your insights and the music, and it's going to be righteous getting to play with you so much this summer.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time, and
we'll do more shows.
Yeah,
on the remote here, not in Pedro.
Yeah, and maybe not even in Switzerland.
Yeah,
maybe we'll do one from
Poland
or Israel, Tel Aviv,
right,
or Moscow,
right? Well, Russia. The town, yeah.
Moscow, no, not
or England or wherever. But wherever we're at, we got time, we're going to do some shows this tour on the road. So this is the May 30th, 2007 edition of the Watt from Pedro show. Keep your powder dry.